never dreamed that you would change my world forever. But here we are, I'm ready to conquer. Ready to fight injustice like I'm fighting monsters. Life is black and blue, happy then it's sad. Just call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky. But I will take it, whether it be pain or pleasure. Life is dark and blue, happy then it's sad. But if you call it an adventure, then it ain't so bad. Together we touch the sky.
This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. It is 10 a.m. on Wednesday, April 17th, which means it's time for the Kenai Conversation. However, today, KDLL Adventure Talks is hijacking the Kenai Conversation, and we are talking trails. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we've got Brettwood Higman, otherwise known as Hig, with Ground Truth Trekking, based in Seldovia, and Eric Clark with Ketchmack Bay State Park. And they are going to tell us about the Tutka Backdoor Trail, the Kenai Peninsula's newest long-distance hiking trail, which they've been working on since 2016. Today's conversation is about how and why the trail came to be, trail building and trail maintenance in general, and particularly in Ketchmack Bay State Park. Tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center, Hig and Eric are going to be talking more specifically about the trail, sharing photos and maps and answering questions. So please come out to that. If you have any interest in hiking this trail this year or in the future, this will be a great way to get the information you will need. Or if you're interested in trails and trail building in general, these guys are really knowledgeable with some very hands-on experience. Hands full of Devil's Club and Salmonberry Thorns experience. So that's tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. Coming up tomorrow, Thursday, April 18th, tune in at 3 p.m. That is a bit of a schedule change, but 3 p.m. we will have Bernie and the Believers playing live in the studio. They're going to be performing at Triumvirate Theater at 7 p.m. tomorrow night, so you can get a sneak peek of their performance live on the air. And Saturday, KDLL has its Carhartts and Extra Tufts Ball. We are embracing the mud and celebrating spring. Being public radio, we do, of course, subscribe to Alaska Dress Code, which is wear whatever you want. But we do encourage you to wear Carhartts and Extra Tufts, and whoever shows up in the most well-loved, well-used, falling-apart pair of Carhartts or Extra Tufts will get a prize. You can also bring your stories related to Carhartts and Extra Tufts. We're going to do some live, short, 3-minute storytelling, and we've got a prize for that as well. We've also got music, live bluegrass music by Big Chimney Barn Dance. We're going to have food from the Schnitzel Bomber, beer from Kenai River Brewing, wine from Alaska Berries, and some really cool auctions and raffles. Just a short list, we've got a saltwater halibut fishing trip, a 2-night stay over in Tulchina Lodge, which is over in Lake Clark, glacier viewing tours, rafting trips, Kenai River dip net, a residential landscaping consultation, artwork, and some other really cool stuff. So that is from 7 to 10 p.m. in the conference rooms at the Soldotna Regional Sports Complex. Admission is $20 or $15 if you are a KDLL member, because we love our KDLL members. So please come out to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And please come out tonight to listen to Hig and Eric in person. And please stay tuned right now. Back to Adventure Talks. So, Hig and Eric, thanks for making time to talk today.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a trail to introduce on the show today, but before we get down that path too far, how about we get to know you two a little better? Can you each tell me just a little about who you are, what you do, and how you came to be involved with trails in general?
Sure, I can jump in first there. I grew up in Soldovia, spent a lot of time wandering around in the woods, and actually I was not a big trail person as a kid. I thought that bushwhacking was the real deal, and so you might use a trail to get to the good bushwhack, but trails were not really my focus at all. And it's sort of a new thing in my life for the last 4 years here, getting into trails. And now, and this is all surrounding this particular project that we've been doing out in the state park, a huge learning curve for me. And now I'm attempting to be a total trail geek. So
this is Eric, and Eric Clark, and I work with Kachemak Bay State Park. I have been involved with the park and actually worked with the park for the past, I think this is my 24th season, and I've been involved with trails for the past 30 years, mainly on the Kenai Peninsula, and I started that after I got out of college.
And what got you interested in trails to start with?
I discovered that I could work out in the woods and get paid for it. That's pretty much what it came down to, you know? And it just was, it got me, the physical labor part of it kind of grasped me. And the idea that I could get paid to go camping and build stuff and construct stuff, it was really, it just grabbed me.
Nice work if you can get it. Also nice if you can be paid to do labor outside of the prison system. It's probably a better way to go about that.
Yeah.
So, Hig, folks around here I think are probably pretty familiar with you from Ground Truth Trekking. But if we've got any listeners who aren't aware of that, could you talk a little bit about what you do outside of your trail work?
Sure. So I'm a geologist. I've got a PhD in geology, and so that scientific background is a big part of who I am. And then another big piece is wilderness adventuring. And my wife and I have been doing big long distance adventures in Alaska, human powered adventures, since 2001 was our first really long one, multiple month trip. And we found a really interesting intersection between those things, that we've found that the experience of going out into the wilderness and being there in person is one amazing way of learning about something. Scientific research is another amazing way of learning things. And when you bring those two together, they give very different perspectives on things. And that's meant a whole lot of different things. It's very hard to boil down into a soundbite, and maybe I shouldn't try. But one of the projects that's come out of that is this trail project.
This is in terms of Kenai Peninsula trails being looked at as a long distance trail, compared to what you and Aaron have done, the Tutka Backdoor Trail. Distance probably doesn't really qualify as real long distance, but
yeah, I figure with trails, you know, once you're getting at least to camping, that's something. That's a step up from your day hike trail. So, but yeah, we put in, I think, 9,000 miles now of off trail hiking in Alaska, and Tutka Backdoor is now about 21 miles. Well, hopefully longer soon.
So all Kenai Peninsula listeners, when we are out hiking this thing and get real tired at about mile 10, we'll just keep that in mind for perspective. So let's get on to the main event, Tutka Backdoor Trail. So first of all, where is this thing? What is this thing? And how did it come to be at the state that it is at least currently in?
So Tutka Backdoor Trail starts at the head of Tutka Bay. So if you were in Homer looking across at the view, a lot of what you're seeing is Kachemak Bay State Park there. And this would be kind of on the right edge of that, of Kachemak Bay State Park, so to the west. And it goes up into the mountains, up into some amazing alpine country, and then it drops down to Taylor Bay, which is on the Gulf of Alaska side. So it provides a connection to that outer coast, to a really pretty remarkable area of remote coast. Very few people make it out there other than now on our trail.
And there used to be another route out there, right, from Seldovia?
Yeah, the Rocky River Road, which you can still follow, though it's got some big washouts. And there definitely are people, so sometimes one of the conversations that comes up sometimes when I'm talking about the trail is people say, well, why didn't you just fix up that road? It does have some advantages, but one of the big disadvantages is that the reason the road is there is that that is a very low elevation pass. So that puts you down where the big rivers and where all the fast-growing brush are for the whole distance. And if you look at the history of that road, that's been the story. It's been overgrown by thick brush. It's been washed out by rivers over and over again. So our trail follows a route that actually, from my perspective, where I first started knowing it, was as a really good bushwhacking route. My wife and I, or actually I think I was out there before I even knew Aaron, in the late 90s, mid-90s, and we've been out there a lot of times, and this was a way for us to get from the Kachemak Bay side to the outer coast.
What was the impetus then to turn it into an actual trail?
It wasn't something that even crossed my mind for a long time. I know that the park had been thinking about ways to get to the outer coast for a lot longer than I had in terms of trails that way. Early in this process that the state park's been going through to revise their long-term planning document, there was a fellow, Jeff Lee, who's also been hugely involved in this trail project, and he was involved in that, and he came and he told me, you know, you should really go and sit down with this group of people who are drawing lines on maps, thinking about future trails. And, you know, that was fun. We went and sat down, looked at a map, and like, oh, you put a trail here, you put a trail there. And I was talking to some of the other folks in that meeting about this cool route through the mountains. And this shows just how naive I was at that time. My sense was like, gee, there's a great bushwhacking route. I mean, you take and you cut a few branches and stuff, and you basically got a trail. Like, this would be easy.
I have a feeling the answer to that is no. No, it is not going to be easy.
It depends on what you call easy, I think.
Okay, that's fair. So, Eric, from your perspective with the park then, what got you guys interested in signing off on this? You know, what's the value of adding new trails? I mean, there's certainly a maintenance and cost issue, I'm sure, for having additional opportunities like this in the park. So what made you guys so interested to go ahead with this?
Well, it goes back to what Higg was also saying, is that when we started working on, as the state was deciding that we're going to redo the Kachemak Bay State Park and Wilderness Park management plan, we were also coming up with a trail plan that would encompass maintenance and ideas that of how, what people would like to see as new trails being put in the park, something that wouldn't happen really immediately, but as funding came along over the next maybe 30 years or so, this would be a way, a direction we would go. And there had been talk and ideas thrown around of doing a trail that would start at the north end of the park in Kachemak Bay, come down, and then also somehow get back up and over to the outer coast. And then with this trail subcommittee that came up, and then when Higg came and he was talking about, you know, this is where you should go. You can't go here. You can't go there. And stuff like this, which was very helpful for people like myself that don't necessarily can always just go hiking in the park because we're dealing with our funding. We are concentrating on the maintenance thing. So with Higg and Aaron and Groundtooth Trekking coming to state parks, we said that we would like to do this. We decided to give it a shot, which was that, all right, you want to build a trail. And okay, here are some stipulations. Here are some ground rules that you got to abide by in dealing with the way you do construct a trail, like dealing with grades and tread construction and where you put something like this, a trail. However, we're going to be pretty much hands off except for overseeing, and kind of in the sense of just making sure that they're following their permit. But we came to the conclusion that, like, if for some reason it just kind of petered out, well, just petered out. And with the classification of trail, which is, you know, a very low class trail, kind of almost like a route, that things would just grow back in. We wouldn't be touching it at all. So that right. was one of the reasons why we said, okay, well, let's give this a shot. What do we have to lose? They're coming to us and say, we can do this. Okay.
And at that point, we didn't actually know that we could do this because we had no idea what we were getting into. But it actually might be useful somewhat to your visitors, just if like just kind of a thumbnail of that arc from, you know, like you cut a few branches to like a trail that that does follow some of these standards and such. And some of the, they're not really revelations, but kind of the process that I went through and kind of learning some of that. One of the things that became clear right away and was very confusing to me at first is this extreme focus on grade being how steep the trail climbs up a slope. So if you're looking at a mountain face and it's steep, you don't think about going straight up the mountain. You think about going up at about, it's like a 16% grade or 10 degrees. And that actually, I think in the trail world, is still on the steep side. To us, it seemed very, very gentle grade. But that's like, you know, just a gradually climbing trail. And initially, I really felt like I didn't understand why we were going there. And now that I've been at that for a few years and I've seen places. So one of the ways that the park was flexible with us that was really helpful is there are quite a few animal trails that exist in these areas. And they give us the latitude to, if we hit a spot where there was an existing animal trail, we could follow that animal trail, even if it went up steeply, as long as there was some way that we could ultimately reroute the trail. And so that's given us a chance to watch, like in those places where we were like, oh, look, there's an animal trail. We'll just cheat this one, go straight up the animal trail instead of wandering all over the place with a low grade. It's given us a chance to watch how those places compare to the places that we went through and built really carefully. And it is remarkable. I feel like now I am on board with that idea that this becomes one of the first things you think about is how do you get that trail to climb not very quickly. And it matters for maintenance. It also matters for just the experience of walking on the trail. It really is a lot easier to walk on that trail. But some of the things that we brought in that I think have been good contributions is looking at trails that, for instance, switchbacks that exist in other trails in the park. We noticed that the bears that also follow the trails, they don't really believe in switchbacks sometimes, and so they'll cut off. They create a little detour, and if the trail grows in a bit, sometimes the bear's trail is more obvious than the main trail. And so what you have is you have a hiker coming along, and they think they're still on the trail, but they've followed the bears into the alders, and all of a sudden they're like, there's no trail here at all. What happened, you know? And we really tried to incorporate that understanding into our design and our understanding from being locals who have been out in this brush a lot of what, like, our biggest number one enemy are salmon berries because of how fast they grow in on a trail. And it's been very interesting to go through that arc. And for me, super rewarding to try to understand some of where the sort of experience that Eric has that come from decades of building trails, of watching problems arise. How do we try to incorporate that more quickly and make something that works? It's been a very exciting process.
Yeah. And with all that grade stuff too, is that, I guess the idea of building trails on a national level and with state agencies, federal agencies, as funding has decreased for maintenance, is the idea is that when you build something, you're thinking of trying to do it with as little maintenance as possible. And a lot of that comes down to how steep it climbs and depending upon your soils and your terrain and all this, and how much water flows, because trails is really a lot about water management, and that's it basically, you know.
This year, so we had some funding through the Recreational Trails Program, and one thing we did with that is we brought in someone to help us build rock structures, and partly that was to actually solve specific problems that, so by a rock structure, I mean like a retaining wall or a set of steps that are made out of local rocks that you've found, but part of that was to solve specific problems, like there were some spots where we needed steps and retaining walls. But a large piece of that was for us to learn and to figure out how, what are the techniques, what do you need to do in order to make really good stone structures like this. And they are very labor intensive, but the whole point there is that if you do a good job, that you walk away from that, and then it may, maybe it requires a little bit of upkeep, but ideally those stone structures might be there for centuries, much longer than any wooden structure, for instance.
Right. Kind of one of those deals, you can do it right the first time or do it multiple times.
Yep, absolutely.
This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and I'm speaking with Brett Wood Higman of Ground Truth Trekking and Eric Clark of Ketchmack Bay State Park. And we're talking about the Tutka Backdoor Trail. This is a pre-recorded conversation since Hig and Eric were down in Homer yesterday. Thanks to our friends at KBBI for helping us get this recorded. Hig and Eric will be in town tonight, though. They're going to do a live photo presentation about the trail at 6:30 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. Admission is free for KDLL members or $5 for non-members. So, Eric, you mentioned talking about what type of, or what class of trail this is going to be. You called it a low-class trail, but that, of course, has nothing to do with the quality of the experience on the trail. But just for reference, can you maybe paint a picture of the different types, the different classes of trails so folks have an idea? It's not going to have, you know, boardwalks and probably a lot of interpretive signage and huts along the way kind of thing. So can you talk about, maybe compare this to some of the other trails in Ketchmack Bay State Park so folks kind of have an idea of what to expect?
Okay. Dealing with classes, there's really like, there's five classes. The best way to explain is sort of like a class five trail would be kind of like a bike path along of a road. Or going out to Exit Glacier, if anybody's been out to Exit Glacier, that's like considered a class five trail. Class one is something that the brush is, the trail is really kind of skinny. So your tread surface, that you, which is your actual walking surface, might only be 12, maybe 18 inches wide. So with the Tutka Backdoor Trail, that dealing with what they were proposing, and just giving this a, you know, let's see if this works. It's like, well, how about we just do it with a class one, which is very little work, which is kind of where I think Hig and Ground Truth Trekking were kind of trying to head towards. Also, you can have steeper grades with that because it just makes it much more challenging. The park itself, on the, all the other trails that we do have, a lot of them are class two. There are some class threes, but most of them are class twos. And that comes back down to grade and difficulty, you know. So you can really think of your trail classes also as difficulty.
From a hiker perspective on the Tutka Backdoor Trail, what I usually tell people is the first 5 to 7 miles, anyone who's comfortable hiking on, you know, trails that are kind of what Eric was just describing, like it's a narrow trail, yes, and so, but it's a trail. You're going to feel like you're on a trail pretty much the whole way for that first 5 to 7 miles. If you go beyond that, that's kind of the first major river crossing would be at 7 miles. Going beyond that, you have river fords to do. In the pass at this time, there are no cairns as it goes over the pass, so you have to be, it's very easy navigation, but you do have to be able to navigate a bit there. There's some steep rock. You might cross snow. You probably will cross snow. There's another larger river crossing on the other side. So there are things, there are challenges that are not necessarily even all trail hikers would be comfortable with all of those challenges. To be really thorough and ready, you would actually carry an ice axe and a pack raft. Although people do it without those, but you have to understand that those are, there are those challenges. So I kind of look at it as like that first section, that first 5 to 7 miles from Tutka is a trail, and the rest of it is an adventure trail. Like, expect it to be a bit of an adventure. You won't be bushwhacking, and you know, but you might spend a little bit of time hunting around for a cairn, and you might have some spots that make you a little nervous walking on bare bedrock, and you have the river crossing. So it's definitely a challenging trail to do the whole thing. And it also goes over the pass, and it goes over one additional mountain. So there's actually about 6,000 feet of climb along the length of the trail. So it's 20 miles, 21 miles may not sound super far, but I would recommend for most hikers figuring on 4 days, even if they were going to be traveling every day. And it's great to have extra days when you could take off into the mountains and explore around there, because there's lots of amazing side hiking to do off trail.
And you guys are going to be bringing pictures and maps and all that good stuff to your presentation tonight. But if folks can't make it to that, or they just can't wait to see what this trail looks like, do you guys have any sort of online presence with information that folks could check out about what the trail's kind of looking like at this point?
There's a Tutka Backdoor Facebook page, and feel free also to ask questions there. And then there is also a webpage on Ground Truth Trekking.
So how long have you guys been working on this at this point?
I think actually the first time we were on the ground was in April of 2016. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about it the fall before that. And I've been out in the area a number of times through, you know, over a decade before that. But as far as actually getting out there and doing initial scouting, me and Aaron, Jeff Lee, I mentioned, Chunks, another person who's put a huge amount of effort into this trail, and then Eric was out there as well. We were out for the initial scouting and while the snow was still on the ground in 2016.
So, Eric, it sounds like this is kind of a unique partnership for the parks to have somebody bring you an idea like this and being willing to put the work in to make it happen. I gotta imagine it's pretty nice for you guys to have someone who has that local knowledge of an area and has a route in mind already. But what is that process like to actually decide, no, we're gonna go up the slope, no, we're gonna bear left here, no, is that just climbing trees and looking? Is it just stomping through the woods? How do you even decide what those routes are going to be?
It's a lot of bushwhacking is really what it comes down to. And then when you add grades into that, it becomes even more challenging, because you know, we can all go out in the woods and we can go like find the easiest route, just like the animals do. But when you're putting in a trail, you start sticking with your climbing, your ascending and descending at certain rates. But it could take quite a bit, especially if you're not familiar with the area. And even if you are somewhat familiar with the general area where your trail leads, you know, your grades kind of lead you to where you might want to go. And that just takes a lot of on-the-ground scouting. That's some of that you can even do with, like nowadays, you got Google Earth and Bings and all these satellite photos that you can actually find out places where you might want to check out versus places that you want to avoid completely, you know. And before satellite photos on Google and all that, I mean, there was aerial photographs. And with these little glasses that you would put two together and you would get a relief so you could see where you would more likely not want to go. Because then you can just like, so, okay, we're not going to go here. This is going to be way too steep. So there's no reason to even look at this. We might be looking somewhere else.
That's when Eric was first, you know, talking to us. It's like, oh, this totally makes sense, right? You know, he just wants us to do a lot of scouting, and you know, we do a lot of bushwhacking, and so conceptually, I feel like, oh yeah, that's easy. But the experience of doing it, I found, really did take a lot of mistakes and a lot of experience there. As much as we can get a lot in a few years, but like of going out and really like saying, trying to challenge your own assumptions. If you think, oh, we're going to have to make the trail work right here, well, let's go check some of these other places that you're pretty sure are not going to work, but let's go wade into those and, you know, go through the Devil's Club and the Blowdown and the Alder. And, you know, sometimes you're surprised. Sometimes there is a really tricky solution that you've walked past many, many times. Yeah, we're still learning there, definitely.
And to bring up the tricky solutions that Hig brought up, I mean, I remember this one place climbing up toward Lunch Mountain, and the way that they wanted to get up high on this little mountain, and I'm just looking at this rock wall, and I'm just like, okay, you know, I have my serious doubts. But what ended up happening is I went back out there in the late summer, is that they found a way up this little rock wall that works. And it does take that time of really ground truthing your surroundings and figuring out, can this work? And if it can't work by just easily walking, what can we do to add to it that can make this work?
Really nice to start learning some of the, like the rock structures, for instance, like what are some of the tricks you can use to solve when you get down to like, oh, 99.9% of this route works and there's this one spot, you know, right. how do you get through that? And how costly might that be? Like if you're going to make that decision, yeah, we're going to make this spot work, even though it's difficult, how much are you committing to there? Right. And that's really been a learning process.
So what ends up making some of those decisions or being the factors into making those decisions about, no, we're going to try it over here and not there? Is it usually water issues? Is it topography? Is it too rocky, not rocky enough, too bushwhacky? I mean, I would imagine it rarely works out that the shortest distance between two points is actually the best route.
Right. Definitely not. Yeah. I think it's a combination of all of that. Coming from a background of in the trail world for many years is that it's all about placement. And if your placement is somewhat poor, dealing with vegetation, you're going to have a lot of maintenance, you know. And it was just sort of like what Hig was saying earlier about the salmon berries. And the alders are the same way, is that it is for a trail manager, those are the bane of your existence of trying to keep a trail system open. And especially what's been going on with the beetle kill and how the park here has kind of morphed into this beautiful, from this beautiful forest with very kind of open understory to this ugly down tree with Devil's Club growing through it with elderberries, and it just keeps creeping and creeping onto your trail where people are literally like doing the breaststroke through Devil's Club, if you can imagine that.
One thing that I think is useful to know as a hiker is just to, if you have a little, and it's actually great to go, if you can go out with Eric as a volunteer on one of the volunteer days, or you feel free to come join us. I'm always looking for volunteers. But if you learn just a little bit of how those trails are made, even if you're just wearing a pair of gloves when you're walking the trail, there's things you can do to benefit the trail. I often carry, and I don't, hopefully I'm not recommending that people go do anything crazy here, but I often carry a bow saw. And with a really good sharp bow saw blade, I take out significant blowdowns that are across trails. And I also trim salmon berries along the edge. I carry the bow saw facing forwards in my hand down by my leg, and I sweep it upward to cut the salmon berries. It's something I can do while I'm walking. It doesn't really slow me down. And it's also, it's a bow saw instead of a machete, so I'm not going to, you know, send myself to the hospital if I miss. So I, you know, there are these little things that as hikers, I find it actually kind of adds to the experience to kind of understand a bit about the trail and about what might be happening and how you can do something really small that might actually really help that trail out over the long term.
Mm-hmm. And I think that if people start learning stuff like that, it is, there are simple things to do. There are some kind of, I would say, specifications that we like to see as a park managers and stuff like that. And it usually comes down to safety issues of like, you know, do you, when you like cut a limb off of a tree, you don't leave a stop, as I call it, sticking out. You know, you cut it toward the boil. You know, there's all these little tricks, but it's not, you know, it's, they're really easy. It's just getting that information out.
In some ways, I think that the Tutka Backdoor Trail has been a great sort of teaching laboratory. Like we've had somewhere around 70 different volunteers have been involved, and somewhere around 700 days. I should look up my exact numbers before we give our presentation tonight. But and because we're out there and we're working on a lot of things all at once, we can give people a chance as volunteers to go out and also to make some mistakes. And, you know, maybe we do have to correct things. There's been cases where people have gone cutting away and then we've said, wait a second, no, we screwed up here. We have to actually put the trail in a completely different place. It does happen, but I think that having those mistakes out there has been really valuable to the group of volunteers that have been involved with this project, as far as them learning about, you know, how do you actually think your way through some of these problems.
Mm-hmm. And I can even tell you from my experience, I've made many of the mistakes doing trail work, and that's how you do learn. You know, it's just the way of the world, really.
Well, and that is a good segue into a pretty huge element of creating this trail, and that is your volunteers, right? How have you found these people? How have you coordinated these people? How have you gotten them over to do work? How does all that part work?
When we were first getting involved, we hadn't been really active in the park volunteer community. You know, I'm over in Soldovia, and a lot of that is based here in Homer. And I didn't really want to subtract a lot from what was already going on, like that the park needs all the volunteer help they can get with what they're going. So by starting up this new project, I'm sure I did draw some of the energy from what they're doing, but I wanted to try to kind of build a new volunteer base. And I had no idea how that was going to go, but we just kind of fumbled our way along. And I think there are a few reasons that that's been really successful. Partly it's just the excitement of, you know, it's a new trail, it goes some really cool places. It's also, I know we have people who come join us because they aren't necessarily, maybe they haven't been camping for years, but all because of the location and such of this trail, everything we do is camping based. We don't go out really for day trips. And people can come with us, and then we, you know, there's a lot of people that do have a lot of comfort doing, you know, being out in the wilderness, and they can learn those skills and such and be comfortable with that. Some of what we've done has been float plane based, crossing the peninsula and working from the Taylor end. There's been a lot of exciting opportunities for volunteers, and that's helped, I think, build that really vibrant group of volunteers, community around this trail.